Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Came across this quote from Nelson Mandela, former president of South Africa. He said, "There can be no keener revelation of a society's soul than the way in which it treats its children." Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Ross at the controls. And Ted, we're going to talk about kids today, but particularly about keeping children safe and the scourge of child abuse, which is just hard to imagine that it happens, that it does, and it's a terrible thing. We know, Jesus' words of Matthew 18, one of the Gospels that records it. It's recorded, I think, in three Gospels, but he says, if anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, to stumble, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea.
Powerful verse.
Yeah.
And, I look forward to hearing from our guest today about how we can help break these cycles of violence. I mean, a lot of times we don't want to interfere. It's not our business. But as a church, we're called to intervene in extreme cases for sure. So
we're talking today with Justin Holcomb. He's back with us. He's an Episcopal priest, teaches theology, philosophy, and Christian thought at Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary. Reformed Theological Seminary is also a canon for vocations for the Episcopal Diocese of Central Florida. We'll connect with him in just a moment. I saw this from Dwight L. Moody, who said, if I could relive my life, I would devote my entire ministry to reaching children for God.
Mm-hmm.
And, we've been talking about children all this month because our ministry partner is Compassion International. I'm just thinking about, those children that abuse is oftentimes part of their life experience as well. Children in poverty are not less than your children or mine. They just have less, but we've got a great link on our website, and I encourage people to check it out at myfaithradio.com.
A really great informative video right there, just a minute and a half long, featuring kids from around the world that have really been impacted by Compassion, and you can be a part of it too. Check out the information right there, myfaithradio.com.
And as they say, we're bringing, we've been helped, we've been received benefit in Jesus' name. That's what Compassion is all about. And that's what we want to focus on as well. Fred Rogers said, anyone who does anything to help a child is a hero to me. So, all right, we're going to talk about God Made All of Me. It's a book to help children protect their bodies, and we do have some copies of that to give away as well. And I hope that you will be willing to join in the conversation. If you're a caring, maybe a relative of someone that you're concerned about, or a grandparent and wondering about your grandchildren, and just we'll talk abuse today and how to help protect kids, Kids don't play it much anymore, but baseball reaching its glorious conclusion.
Yes, tonight, so, game one in Cleveland.
Yeah, Cleveland and the Cubs. So how did Cleveland have a better record?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Overall, division.
NBA tonight, and NFL's underway. And the sport of political correctness and judicial overreach is in full swing, which we're not too happy about, but here's John Stone Street.
Say this or else. For the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. It's bad enough if the government tells you what you can't say, but a law that tells you what you must say under the threat of severe punishment is even more unjust and dangerous. So said Alliance Defending Freedom senior counsel Matt Bowman after the Ninth Circuit's Court of Appeals upheld a California law that forces pro-life pregnancy centers to post a disclosure saying that California provides free or low-cost abortion and contraception services. The disclosure must also include a phone number for these services. Bowman says that forcing these centers to promote abortion and recite the government's preferred views is a clear violation of their constitutionally protected First Amendment freedoms, which is why other courts struck down similar laws in other states. Our first response to this latest blow against religious freedom and freedom of speech should be prayer for the church and the nation. Our second response, support organizations that defend religious freedom. They're on the front lines for all of us. With today's Point, I'm John Stone Street.
Great to have you listening to Connecting Faith. It's 8 past the hour, and I want to connect again with Justin Holcomb, Episcopal priest, serving as the canon for vocations in the Diocese of Central Florida, and teaches theology, philosophy, and the Christian thought. He has a couple of master's degrees. He and his wife Lindsay have been counseling victims of sexual assault for many years and offer hope through their books, including Is It My Fault?, Rid of My Disgrace, and the most recent we want to talk about, God Made All of Me. It's a book to help children protect their bodies, and it's primarily for a child in the, maybe 2 to 8 year old range or so, just to understand a bit more about that. And Justin, I know I think it's April is Child Abuse Awareness Month, but the reality is it goes on all year long, doesn't it? Welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for having me back, and keep on coming back and talking about all the dark issues that we need to shine a light on so people know how to help those who are suffering in these ways. So, yeah, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, but that's just a time to focus on it and draw attention to it. But as we'll talk about, the statistics show that it is a very prevalent and horrible thing happening all the time in many families that we wouldn't even imagine.
It's hard to, I guess, comprehend it. And I was just, you mentioned that verse out of, Matthew 18. It seems like if we're rating evil, abuse of children would be near the top. Jesus took this pretty seriously, too, didn't he? I mean, those pretty serious words of Jesus about those who harm little kids.
Absolutely. And I serve on the board for GRACE, Godly Response to Abuse in Christian Environments. And something that we talk about is the devastation and trauma done to children has an enormous effect on their spiritual vitality, especially if it's done in a Christian home or in a Christian organization. So that's why the organization is, again, Godly Response to Abuse in Christian Environments, because when abuse is done from someone who claims to be a Christian or in a Christian setting, what it does is it creates an enormous wall or gulf between that child and the Christian faith. Now, the very place that there is great hope and healing in Christ, the perpetrator has put up a wall in between and thinking that this whole Christian faith thing is not safe, especially if it makes people do this. Now, of course, we know it doesn't make them do it, but the association is just devastating. So, and the numbers are shocking. 1 out of 5 children will be abused before their 18th birthday, sexually abused, not physical, which is even worse. I mean, they're worse in the statistic realm, but sexually abused, 1 out of 5 before their 18th birthday, and 93% of perpetrators are friends or family members or acquaintances of the children. Only 7 to 10% of perpetrators are strangers to the child. So that's stranger danger is kind of a myth. It is a danger, but by far way more of a threat are the people that children already know, and making sure the parents and caregivers are aware and have their guard up on how grooming takes place and some of the things that we can do to teach our children to protect their bodies.
So have we the emphasis on stranger danger, has that maybe even kind of worked against us in terms of the messaging in our society that we've overlooked the real source?
Yes, I think that's very nicely put. Is what it's done is it's given us a false sense of security. And we've thought, oh, well, we know so-and-so, and they're the neighbor down the street, or they're the uncle, or they're the Sunday school teacher. They'll be fine there. Because, we have a false sense that our children are protected because they're in our bubble. Well, the bubble is the place where a lot of the danger is actually taking place. So it's the false sense of security that causes parents and children to let their guard down. Now, the children aren't to blame. It's not like they're letting their guard down. They're just being children and going where their parents send them and allow them to go. But they, because the most of the message is, hey, be aware of strangers, well, that does send the message to the child that, well, if so-and-so is my mom and dad's friend, they're safe. And when we talk to our children about obeying authority, they don't have all the nuances of going, oh, well, obey the authority, unless they ask you to do something that makes you feel sad or uncomfortable. I mean, that's the thing, is when you start telling people like, oh no, just, hug grandma and hug grandpa and just do it. And we can talk about this as one of the ways to communicate with our children, but that's a confusing message to just kind of obey the authority without helping them think through and role playing. How do they handle that? So yeah, there's plenty of messages that are being sent to children that aren't helpful and are actually a hindrance to their safety.
Well, Well, say a word about why you wrote you and Lindsay wrote this book called God Made All of Me, and the subtitle says it all, a book to help children protect their bodies. You've written others for those that have experienced, you know, the shame of this, is it my fault and rid of my disgrace, but what's unique about this book?
Yeah, the first two books my wife and I wrote together were for those who have suffered sexual abuse and domestic abuse, and we wanted to write a book on the preventative side, see if there's a way for us to prevent people from having those horrible experiences. And this is a children's book, just so everyone knows. This is a children's book. It's an illustrated book. It's bright colored. This isn't a book to parents on how to protect your kid. This is actually a children's book. This is the tool we want parents and caregivers to have. Now, there's a letter to parents in the beginning, but we wrote this book because we have two biological daughters and a foster son, and they are 5 and 7, and the foster son is 2. And so we have these children in our lives. God's entrusted them to us, and we wanted to create a book that we needed. We basically looked at all of the books that were out there, took the best of the Christian books about what does a Christian faith bring to this conversation about God making you and you're the image of God, and what does that mean? But also just doesn't have to be Christian or non-Christian, just the truth of how to protect one's body and what do children need to hear? What are some of the tools that are there for parents and children to be aware of their bodies and to learn about their bodies and to learn what appropriate touch and inappropriate touch are and how to respond? So we basically kind of just made the book that we needed, and we wrote it, and we were going to draw our own pictures. We were going to get our friends to draw the pictures, and we sent it to a publisher, and they said, we want this book. So we kind of backed into it. We created the tool that we needed for our kids, and apparently we found out that there are thousands of parents. I mean, it was the response to the book over the past year has been unbelievable, there's the reports we're getting back from parents on the conversations they're having with their kids. And it's done what we wanted it to do, which is to be a tool for parents, to empower parents to have the conversations, because those are some weird conversations to have. I mean, there's not usually a manual on how do you talk to your kid about sexual abuse and how do you talk about body parts? How do you talk about appropriate touch? I mean, it's hard enough for many parents just to have the birds and the bees talk, let alone the darkness that comes with the topic of sexual abuse, especially if one of the parents has been abused. It makes it even harder for them to talk about it and not knowing how to say too little or too much. So we wrote it as a tool, and it's being used as a tool for parenting.
We've got a couple copies to give away and would love to get one in your hands. It's a great resource. It is an effective tool. And we'd also love to have you join the conversation. Maybe you're concerned about abuse among family or friends, or suspect there might be something, or you have experienced it yourself and just wondering how do you communicate to your kids about that. We are going to talk about how to have that conversation and talk frankly about the issue of sexual abuse today. As we talk, God Made All of Me, a book to help children protect their bodies. It's from Justin Holcomb. Justin and Lindsay Holcomb have co-written that. They have also co-written Is It My Fault and Rid of My Disgrace. Justin serves as the canon for vocations for the Episcopal Diocese of Central Florida, and he teaches theology and philosophy at Gordon-Conwell Seminary and Reformed Theological Seminary. And he's also serves on the Board of Grace, Godly Response to Abuse in Christian Environments. More with Justin Holcomb coming up in a moment. Let me give the phone number for you to register for a copy of this book. It's 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. And you can sign up to get a copy of God Made All of Me. We'll do a drawing at the end of the hour. If you have a question or you want to remain anonymous, you can do that as well. We'd love to have you join the conversation and get some hope and encouragement from Justin Holcomb today. 877-93-FAITH.
In the eye of the storm, you remain in control. In the middle of the war, you guard my soul. You alone are the anchor when my sails are torn.
today at the rate of one out of five will be abused sexually before their 18th birthday. And as Justin has reminded us, 93% of that occurring from family, friends, neighbors, someone known. Clearly, a lot of mixed messages when those families are also involved and engaged in the church. And we're talking today with Justin Holcomb, who is an Episcopal priest, and he's a canon for vocations for the Episcopal Diocese of Central Florida. He and his wife, Lindsay, have counseled victims of sexual assault for many years. They've written several books, including Is It My Fault?, Rid of My Disgrace. And the one we're referencing today is called God Made All of Me. It's a book to help children protect their bodies. And we're going to get to some of your calls and the conversation coming up. But let's, Justin, I know that this is something, an area that you have some personal interest in. I mean, partly knowing what to say to your children because of your background. Just say a bit about your passion for this area.
Yeah, well, the passion comes from a few different areas, personally, pastorally, and professionally. Professionally, I teach about this subject in universities and seminaries. My wife was a case manager at a sexual abuse crisis center and a domestic violence shelter. Pastorally, because I've been a minister for over 20 years, and this is one of the main topics that is brought up in conversations about the effects and how the gospel of Jesus Christ, his life, death, work, in his word, how they connect, how the grace from the ministry of Christ connects to the disgrace of experiencing that type of suffering and sin done against you. And then personally, because I was 10, 11, 12 when an extended family member sinned against me in this way and had to navigate as a kid some of those feelings and communicate that with my parents. And so I'm all in on this topic. And so it does sit home personally for me. And thankfully, I have had and have great parents who were believers and didn't say or do some of the things that can be done, which is make a child feel like they did something wrong, that they are shameful, that they are dirty, that kind of thing. So those are the reasons that this topic has gotten our attention.
So let's talk about what we shouldn't do, maybe we should do and shouldn't do, and talk to our children about their bodies, and so that we don't blame them for any of this.
Yeah, well, we go through at the very end of the book, we actually have a section, we have a letter in the front to parents, and then we have a section in the back called 9 Ways to Protect Your Children from Sexual Abuse. One of those is to teach the proper names of private body parts. This, it doesn't mean you only ever use proper names, but it means teaching them the proper names, and this is for numerous reasons. One is because it just has the basic integrity of if your arm's your arm, it's called an arm. It's not called the ball thrower or the ice cream scooper. It's just an arm. And your private body parts, that's just what they're called. And to not offend anyone driving down the street or if their kids are in the car, you all know, everyone knows what the proper names are of private parts. Now, the importance of doing that is, one, for reporting. A child needs to be able to be pretty specific if something did happen, if someone did touch them somewhere, to be able to say where they were touched. But the more important reason is actually because this is a tool, the naming of a private part is a tool that a perpetrator will use. If they can turn a private part into a game, so, you know, it makes it a plaything. It's not that's one of the tools that a perpetrator has, which is to make a game out of a private part. So teaching the proper names of private parts is really important. And now, I've had friends who will tell stories, and we'll be hanging out at their house, and they'll tell a story, and there'll be a story in which one of the parents didn't use the proper name, and the other spouse, this happened numerous times, has said, hey, remember, the Holcomb said we always have to use the proper names. I'm like, we didn't say always. We're just saying make that normal talk. And there's something good to just, you know, the nicknames that children and parents give to their private partner. That's fine. It actually normalizes it. But proper names is very important. Another one is to talk about touches, and it's that very important to talk about, and this is a clunky word to use with children, but it's very important: appropriate and inappropriate touches. And we use that language instead of good and bad touch. Good touch, good and bad, is very confusing to a child if they have been touched in, you know, a bad way. But if it physiologically feels good, that's confusing. Or if that bad touch makes them feel like they are bad because they were touched in that way. So a child, when they hear good touch, bad touch, and then someone touches them inappropriately, it's very confusing for them. So you talk about appropriate and inappropriate touches. But talking about touches, where someone can touch, where people should never touch, who's allowed to touch you there. So we've had these conversations with our children and just said, okay, only mommy and daddy when we're helping you get dressed or get clean, or a doctor when mommy and daddy are there. I mean, just being very specific about who can touch, and that they are allowed to say no to touch. And it doesn't have to be just inappropriate touch. It could be any kind of touch, giving some rules on that. So we've had this happen a few times, and it's great. I love it. I like my daughters feeling empowered over who's touching their body at a young age. My dad, who is he's an affectionate guy. I learned how to hug and cry because I'm my father's son. I mean, he's emotionally available and out there, and he doesn't hide his tears, and he gives big hugs, and I love it. So a few years ago, when my mom and dad were visiting, and our daughters were probably 3 and 5 at the time, he looked over to my oldest at the time and said, "Hey, can I come over here and give Grandpa a hug and a kiss?" And she said, "No, thank you." And he had a beard. It was the only reason. She just didn't like getting the scratchy beard on her cheek. And he said, "Oh, come on over." And he kind of just pushed again, said, "Come on over. I'm not going to see you for a while. It's going to make me sad if I don't get my hug and a kiss." And so I pulled my dad aside and said, "Hey, Dad, I know why you want a hug and a kiss. You're just an affectionate guy, and I love that. But do you want Sophia to think that it's appropriate and normal for men to beg for physical affection, and if they don't get it, to keep on whining, and then she's supposed to give in?" And he said, "Well, absolutely not. I see what you're doing there." So he got it. And so he walked in and said, "Hey, can Grandpa have a high five?" And she gave him a high five, and then dove on him and gave him a hug and a kiss. Things like that, helping parents talk to their kids about when they can say no about touch, is very helpful.
We take a quick break and come back, and we'll talk more, maybe some warning signs for a potential abuser, and more about how we have those conversations, and some hope and encouragement for families that are trying to help kids maybe overcome that. Justin Holcomb, my guest today. He's an author, along with his wife Lindsay, of the book God Made All of Me, a book to help children protect their bodies. We've got some copies to give away. Be honored to have you sign up for that. We'll do a drawing at the end of the hour. And if you have a question or a comment, too, you're welcome to join us. Here's our phone number. It's 877-93-FAITH. You can be anonymous with your call, 877-933-2484, or you can connect with us via email at myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're talking today to parents and caregivers to be smarter and better prepared for those who want to harm the child that you love and want to protect. And we're talking about how to have that conversation. God Made All of Me is the book we're referencing, a book to help children protect their bodies. We do have some copies to give away, and you can join with us to sign up for that at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. And maybe that you have a question or comment as well, as we talk about the scourge of child abuse, sexual abuse in our nation, in our world today. Justin Holcomb is my guest today. He and his wife Lindsay have counseled many victims of sexual assault for many years, and he is a pastor. He's a teacher, teaches theology, philosophy, and Christian thought. He's also a canon for vocations for the Episcopal Diocese of Central Florida. And we're talking today about, you know, how we have that conversation about, you know, children and their bodies. And You know, one of the areas you mentioned, a story about, you know, your dad wanting a hug and their daughter said no. You know, how do we balance that? Children are taught to obey authority, but then we also don't want to blame them for the abuse that may come their way.
Yeah, well, the first thing is to err on the side of safety. So I've always just told the girls, I'm like, hey, you always trust mom and dad. And if anyone asks you to do something, you don't like it, you just say no. Say no, thank you. And if you're not sure if it's something that we'd want you to do, and you can take that risk and then come explain it to us and tell us what happened. And so if it's a teacher, if it's a Sunday school teacher, anything. We have 88 churches in the diocese, and I work with a lot of clergy. And I go to a lot of clergy dinners and meetings, so I don't want them looking at someone that has a collar on or behind the pulpit and thinking, oh, that person is – we don't know that person, but let's assume they're safe. I want them assuming no one is just, like, totally safe without scaring them. So we don't want to instill fear in them, but I want them to be able to say no to anyone. And so they'll come to us and say, hey, we said no at this point and this point, and we're like, okay, so we'll talk about it. But the story that happened recently was at a birthday party for my mom, and we were there, and one of my mom's friends hadn't seen my daughter, and she's been a family friend since I was a kid. I'm 43, so she's been around. She was friends with my family before I was born, my mom and dad. So she's been there through everything, and so she saw my daughter and said, hey, would you come over here and sit in my lap? I just want to give you a big hug and just talk to you. And my daughter, who's 7, she just didn't want to. She doesn't like sitting in people's laps. And she looked over and she said, oh, no thank you, Miss fill-in-the-blank. And said, no thank you, but I'll talk to you from over here. And so it was perfect because she didn't want to be held. She didn't want to be hugged. She didn't want to be pressured into sitting on someone's lap. But she realized, okay, I'm here with friends, and I don't even want to talk to an adult right now. She wanted to go play, but she said, okay, I can sit and talk to you right here. And I was so proud of her response because that was just what my wife mostly and I have been talking to her about is, okay, you can say no, but how do you say no respectfully? Now, of course, there is a time to say no and, you know, kick them in the knee and run away, and we teach that stuff too. But there's a way to parents err on the side of safety for your child and explain. Just have those conversations with the people in your circle. Have the conversations with the Sunday school teacher and the school teacher and the neighborhood families and say, hey, you know what? I don't pressure her to go around giving hugs and sitting on people's laps. And they're allowed to say no, and that's okay. But we're teaching them how to say no respectfully and how to handle that. So help us out. And what I found is that conversation is actually freedom for other parents to have those conversations and to share things that work really well. We've just been finding that this is something a lot of parents are thinking about. It feels awkward for many people. And I'm just encouraged at seeing how easy it is to actually have these conversations and how many other parents are going, oh, this works for me, or that is a difficult situation, and really kind of sharing the load as parents.
Well, we, you know, many of these are, you know, well-intentioned, and, you know, it's grandmas and grandpas or aunts and uncles, whatever it might be. But as you said, 93% of those that are abused it's with someone that within the family circle, if you will. So what are the warning signs? What do we need to be looking out for then?
Pay attention to there's a few kind of physiological, social, psychological. Pay attention to the nightmares. God made humans amazingly intricate. And when things are happening to a child, it gets processed and it can come out. I'm not saying every nightmare means anything. It could just be a fear of anxiety or insecurity or something. But just pay attention, see what they're dreaming about. If your child really has an aversion to a certain place or a certain person, pay attention to that. Ask gently, ask subtly, ask clearly if you need to. I've heard stories of one church where the little 4-year-old girl didn't like one Sunday school teacher and didn't like a particular room, the bathroom. And the parents handled it marvelously, talked to the daughter, talked to the pastors. The church handled it marvelously. the Sunday school teacher handled it marvelously, submitted to investigation, and they did a thorough one. And so, and thankfully there was nothing found, and as they pursued the child's thinking and stuff, that found out that it wasn't, didn't seem to be anything, any sexually inappropriate. So if they have an aversion or dislike, pay attention to that. Gastrointestinal, anything with like the knots in the stomach. Again, going back to how God made us, things, thoughts, and ideas can get manifested in physiologically, and the body just does that. It holds on to tension and fear, and frequently gastro issues can be a part of it. Or if you see a child who, and this is always difficult, this is, you need to interpret, avoidant of the fact that there are boys and girls in body parts, or hypersensitive to sexual things. Just being attentive to, on that spectrum of being too far or none at all, of, okay, is this normal psychological sexual development? It seems abnormal. Paying attention to that. We've had some parents who have said, hey, my child is, you know, doing certain things at this age that don't seem normal. What do we do? And you have to ask and talk to a child developmental psychologist and talk to counselors about this, or the child just will not acknowledge that they have private parts. They're very, very shy with everyone. And that, just be attentive. When you have that intuition, start listening. Continue to listen to that intuition. If you aren't, go for it. Go with the gut feeling. Go with the intuition on concern. Don't stifle that. But those are just some of the big ones: aversion, nightmares, over interest or no interest in body parts type of thing. And those are helpful ones to pay attention to.
This would be maybe a good time to mention a couple of websites if people want to get more information. I know you have some things on your website, but there's also the netgrace.org as well. Say more.
Yes. Well, if I talked about in the book, we had a letter to parents on the front end of the book, just kind of some of the statistics and some of the basic stuff. And on the back end, we have these 9 things parents can do to protect their children from sexual abuse. Both of those, the letter to parents and the 9 things, are at my website, justinholcomb.com, H-O-L-C-O-M-B as in boy, justinholcomb.com. And just for the topic on child sexual abuse and prevention and reporting, netgrace.org, net, N-E-T, grace, G-R-A-C-E.org, is just filled with helpful resources on how to prevent, how to respond, and how to report child sexual abuse. And that's the organization Godly Response to Abuse in Christian Environments. I've been a board member for over 5 years. They just do amazing work, and they just have tons of resources at that website.
Let's say more about how to respond, and talk about shame and blame. You know, children are not to blame, but that is naturally going to happen, isn't it? The children are going to feel that way.
You said the two words, shame and blame. That is what children feel. They feel like they are dirty and filthy and disgusting, and that a dirty thing has happened to them because they're a dirty kid. That's what they think. And they feel shame and that they are to blame. Why didn't I say something sooner? Why did I let them do that? Depending on how old they are. But even adults, psychologically developed, they have all, you know, rational tools. When something happens to them, they feel shame and blame. How much more are children who don't have all of those tools at their fingertips and communication ability? They just feel disgusting and as if they have done it. And that's what the perpetrator is saying, is the perpetrator will frequently say something along the lines of, oh, you're so wonderful. You're my only friend. You make me feel like wanting to do this. Or I wouldn't have done this if you didn't want me to. Perpetrators, what they do is blame the child to perpetuate it, to keep it going, and to keep it silent. So for parents to respond and make sure that they reiterate, you didn't do anything. They sinned against you. You didn't sin. They sinned against you. And so affirming that, we're here to protect you. We're here to help. And then and then talking about, you know, where in your life have you needed the grace that comes from the person and work of Jesus Christ applied in your life? When were you afraid, parent? When were you anxious? When did you feel filthy and dirty and unlovable? And then telling them, I remember how I felt, and I needed to know that God loved me. And the way that I know God loves me is that he sent Jesus to die for me and to make me part of his family, and he makes all the pain go away one day. I mean, all the hope that you have as a parent, get the touch points going on your life and how you depend on this good news and communicate that. And then that's the ministry to the child, and be there and get them the care they need. If it was your oversight, apologize to them. And then report it. If it's a family member, if it's a friend, don't do the investigation. Your job is to report. Don't investigate. Because perpetrators, on average, the average perpetrator has 120 victims. They are masterful at deceiving, and they've gotten away with it. So when parents go in there and go, hey, Bob, like, hey, you know, my kid said this, I mean, that just seems really weird. Like, you wouldn't do that, would you? Or if you even have a little bit more of an edge to it, say, hey, my kid said this. Like, what in the world's going on? Well, that guy has an amazing story of explanation. He's been doing this for a long time and getting away with it. You, parents, go ahead and do the awkward thing and report it to the authorities. And worst case scenario is that they investigate, do a thorough investigation, they find out that that didn't happen. Well, if that person really loves your child, they won't care that they got investigated. They'll be like, you know what, I am proud to have a friend like you who would take care of their kids and watch out for them.
Yeah.
That's what parents, the risk, and I get it, parents, they don't want to make things awkward. They don't want to accuse the deacon at the church. But you know what? It's because of that feeling of people-pleasing and awkwardness and trying to avoid it that so many thousands of kids are still being abused, and those perpetrators are getting away with it. So do the awkward thing and report them, because you cannot investigate. You need authorities to investigate, and your kid needs your attention toward them, not divided of you playing investigator with a potential perpetrator.
Justin, we're going to take a call, and then we'll take a break, and you can answer on the other side of it. But this anonymous listener had a question about a family situation. Go ahead. You're on with Justin Holcomb.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a situation where I have a family member who violated my daughter. It happened when he was 13 and my daughter was 10. He's now being prosecuted for these charges. We found out that he also did some other things to some other family members, and they're the ones who reported it. It is going into trial now, and we have a say in what should happen to him. He is now 22, and my daughter's 18. Any advice on what we should do?
All right, we're going to take a quick break and come back, and Justin will have an opportunity to answer that here as we continue on Connecting Faith. Justin Holcomb's my guest today. We're talking about issues of sexual abuse. Justin and his wife Lindsay have written and counseled victims of sexual assault for many years. They've written several books, including Is It My Fault? And Rid of My Disgrace. And we've been focusing today on God Made All of Me. It's a book to help children protect their bodies. We've got some copies of that to give away. We'll do that at the top of the hour at 877-93-FAITH. We'll get to your question here in just a moment. Stay tuned. Justin Holcomb is Episcopal priest, serving as the canon for vocations in the Diocese of Central Florida. He's a professor of theology, he's a pastor, and he's passionate about the area of helping those victims of sexual assault and abuse. Talking about his book, God Made All of Me, a book to help children protect their bodies. And a listener says, you know, we had a family member that abused a child, and now there's a trial. So what would you recommend, Justin?
Yeah, who abused a child and found out that that perpetrator abused other people also, which fits right into what would be expected, that is rarely a one-time type of event, but there's usually a pattern. And it's very helpful because the parents are going to be torn between mercy and justice. And I get it, thinking, okay, well, I'm Christians. We're supposed to believe in things like forgiveness and mercy, but they also did something horrible, and they could hurt other people, and that's the justice side. Here's the thing for people to keep in mind. This works in personal relationships and in situations like this where it's personal but also has a legal dimension to it, because I think the question was, is we get to have a say in what happens. Like, the judge wants to hear things, which is great. Okay, there's really three pieces: forgiveness, reconciliation, and restoration. Forgiveness can happen. I can forgive someone who sinned against me. I can tell God I forgive them and kind of let it go in one regard. The pain's still there, not letting it go in some type of superficial way, but I can, and people debate about this, but I believe that we can forgive someone even if they don't ask for forgiveness. That is me choosing to forgive that person, and there's some parables on this, and Jesus talks about it, saying, hey, you've been forgiven of cosmic treason. Can you forgive the other person for the smaller debt they owe against you? The Apostle Paul says, forgive others as you have been forgiven. So we are called to forgiveness. Now, reconciliation happens when that other person who sinned repents and asks you to forgive them and apologizes. At that point, you can say, I forgive you, or I forgave you, in being you were reconciled as brothers and sisters in Christ. You can be reconciled as Christians, and you can even be reconciled, not even just in Christ. If they're not a believer, they can still apologize, and you can say, I forgive you. You're reconciling. Restoration is restoring the relationship to what it was like before. Now, that's always on the table. Sometimes restoration would be a horrible thing to do. Now, when you're talking about a friendship and you're saying, hey, I lied about you behind your back, and the other person says, I forgive you, and you've apologized, we're reconciled, and we can restore this. We can get back there. And you can restore the relationship to like it was before, and it might even grow stronger. This happens in marriages. A marriage should be have all of these dimensions. But if someone commits a crime, not only a sin but a crime, it might be unwise to restore that relationship. If a grandparent abuses a granddaughter, at no point ever in that grandfather's life should he ever be left with a child ever again. He can be forgiven. He can even be reconciled. But restoring the relationship would be unwise. So I'd want the person who asked this question to think through, okay, you can forgive him. You can't even reconcile. But do you think it's wise for this person to be restored to the community in full capacity, or should this person register as a sex abuser for the rest of their life? Should they have to deal with the fact that parents and other people need to be warned about proclivities and patterns of relating to children sexually? I think those are really helpful to have in your thinking of, okay, wait a second, I can forgive that person. I'm not un-Christian because I'm not restoring the relationship fully back to where it was. I can forgive and reconcile, but maybe not restore, or restore to a certain capacity. So that's what I want that person to think through.
Just have a couple minutes left, Justin. I know that I think maybe one of your previous books you said domestic violence, which is not quite what we're talking about, but I guess it really is, thrives when we are silent. But if we take a stand and work together, we can end domestic violence. What does take a stand look like?
Take a stand looks like for abuse in general, it looks like acknowledging the pain that a victim is going through, to call it what it is, to call it a sin and a crime. That's one thing. To also raise the bar of expectations in the way that we communicate in churches and in families and in our relationships of when we hear about these things, being involved in some way, passing on something that you're hearing in the conversation or in the book, and not tolerating kind of the boys will be boys type of way of thinking about things, like, oh shucks, this is what boys do. Deep in our culture. These are things that boys are socialized to think that they can relate to girls in certain ways. It's in social media. It's in our culture. And to kind of not put up with some of the kind of, oh, it's just boys being boys. It's just, you know, and I'm not mean this is a political statement, but the whole, like, it's locker room talk. No, that's not, and I'm, again, not being political, but that's in our communication now. It's the way people are actually talking about, like, locker room banter. I'm like, no, we don't banter about sexual abuse. And find out, don't put up with joking about domestic abuse or domination of women or things like that. Let's just not joke about it at all.
Is this learned behavior, is it ever curable?
Unfortunately, the recidivism is, and that's the returning back to it, is very high. And I've had registered sex offenders in churches where I've served, and so it's very high. And because of that, the perpetrators who know it, and when you have standards for them on where they can go and not go in church and around, they get it. And so there's a wonderful, beautiful thing about a perpetrator who's known the forgiveness of God in Christ and realizes what they've done. But they realize that they're an adopted child of God. They have faith in Christ. They're adopted in the family, and they're in, just like everyone else is. It is discouraging to see the return back to the pattern. But what I've seen a few times, we've had perpetrators who have come to say, hey, I want to worship here, but I just need you to know that I have to register as a sexual abuse perpetrator. And we had policies and procedures, and we said, okay, well, you'll have to come to this service, the evening service, because we don't have child care. We actually don't have any children to come to this service. And as soon as you come in, you're going to have to register with me or that person, and you have a one strike and you're out policy. You're going to have to come in directly to us, register, and then walk out, and there's certain expectations, and depending on the level of sexual predation, there is just different policies. And I remember one guy checking in, and the look of shame that he had with me. He's like, "Hey, I'm here," and I was like, "Hey." He checked in, and that sign-in sheet was a reminder of what he'd done, and I could tell he just felt like he just felt disgusting and shameful. And I looked at him and I said, "Hey, brother," I'm like, "You're in the family too, and this is your church. And that's still your table. It's our Lord's table, and he invites you to it. And it's his word, and he wants you to hear it. So this is your family. I know this is miserable, and this is something that we all have to do, and I know you get that." And he just sat there. He's like, "I know. I get it. I totally get it. I regret what I've done. I can't believe what I've done. And this is the consequence that I know I have to live with the rest of my life, and I get it." But they need to hear, the perpetrators, the people who have sinned and done a crime in this way, they also need to hear the good news, but not in some type of sloppy, like, "Oh, well, God forgave you, let's not have any consequences or have any policies," because, you know, policies are not anti-gracious. It's actually really gracious for the perpetrator and the other people who have been sinned against. Policies are great, and they're wonderful tools of grace. But unfortunately, the recidivism is high, and it doesn't mean it's hopeless. It just means that having appropriate expectations is very important.
Well, our time is gone, but it's been an important hour. And thank you, Justin, for your words of hope and encouragement and clear teaching. You can find out more on Justin's website, justinholcomb.com. Or if you want to find out more just about the God Made All of Me book, a book to help children protect their bodies, you can go to netgrace.org, netgrace.org. Justin's Episcopal priest, and he's a teacher of theology and philosophy, and he and his wife Lindsay have counseled victims of sexual assault for many years and offer hope through their books like Is It My Fault and Rid of My Disgrace. And Justin, we're just honored to have you with us again on Connecting Faith.
My pleasure. Thanks again for having me and for the opportunity to talk about this.
You can find out more if you missed part of today's program. We post the interviews online. You can go to the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com, and go to Connecting Faith. Tomorrow on Connecting Faith, Randy Newman joins us. We'll talk about his new book, Engaging with Jewish People, Understanding Their World and Sharing the Good News. Randy's got some great stories, some great insights for how we can more effectively and winsomely share the gospel. Join us for Connecting Faith tomorrow here on Faith Radio.